This is episode 45 of the Sales and Marketing ROI Podcast.
Welcome to the ProfWorks Sales and Marketing Podcast. Today we have the privilege of having a guest with us, and that guest is Fabian Ekelstrom French, and he's the head of agency partnerships at Bizible. And if you're not familiar with what Bizible is, it's a B2B marketing attribution software service. They come from the same place as Starbucks and Microsoft, to the beautiful city of Seattle. So thank you, Fabian. And hopefully I pronounced your last name correctly. Did I butcher it or was it okay?
You did a pretty good job.
Good.
Extra French.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Yeah, so just to start off, maybe thought you'd give us maybe a 30, 60 second overview, a little bit about who you are and your background and anything you want to tell the audience about you.
Yeah, sure. So thank you for having me here. As you said, my name is Fabian Ekelstrom French, and I run our agency partnership program here at Bizible. Essentially, my background is in marketing and management consulting before I came to Bizible, and now I'm heading up our agency partnership here. And yeah, just being able to sort of work in the world of technology, software as a service. We work with amazing marketers and are doing some really great things around sort of understanding what marketing channels are driving revenue for our clients. And yeah, happy to speak to you to that end and answer any questions that you have today.
Yeah, that's great. I think everyone that listens to the podcast will be definitely interested. That's great information to know for any business. You know, where's the best place to spend your marketing dollars? That's a common kind of question or challenge that I hear business owners have. So I think this will be information that a lot of people are very interested to hear. So in the podcast, what we're going to do is what you're going to get, I guess, out of the podcast is we're going to overview what are the five marketing methods that on average have had the best ROI for the companies that are using Bizible. So we're going to use Bizible's data to talk about that. We're also going to overview the different models that a company can use for sales attribution and talk about each of those models and maybe the pros and cons of those different models. And then we're also going to get into what kind of an ROI a business should expect to get from their marketing. So you have a good sense for, you know, if you're spending X amount in marketing dollars, what kind of return should you get from that? And then finally, at the end, we'll have a good tip in terms of you know, what you could do to maybe increase revenue for your business. But before we get there, I have to ask this, Fabian: what's or who is your favorite sports team, and why?
It's a really good one. So I'm from New Zealand, and our national sports team is the All Blacks.
Yeah.
We're pretty good. So that would be it. And if I'm going to go North American, then I'm living in Seattle, so it's the Seahawks.
Very good. Two very good teams. Yeah. And what is it that you like about rugby?
You know what? I think it's just part of the culture in New Zealand. It's kind of ingrained in you. It's difficult to get to any kind of specifics. It's just sort of part of being a Kiwi is
that's part of life. Yeah, for sure. Very good. So jumping into more of the business related questions for the podcast today. So the first question, from your data at Bizible across kind of all your clients, what would you say are the top five marketing methods that tend to generate the best return on investment?
Cool. So this is a good question. It's also it's a difficult one to answer concisely just because it does vary so much across industries. That being said, we've done some research. We conduct an annual state of pipeline marketing report, so a survey for an annual report. And the findings that we've come up with is, on average, the top performing channel for ROI is word of mouth referrals, followed by email, SEO, search engine optimization, conferences, trade shows, and outbound calling. So those would be the top five in stages. There are different funnel stages that perform differently. Different channels perform better at different stages of the funnel as well.
For sure. And for some people that might not be familiar with what you mean by funnel stages, but we'll get to that later. But the first question in relation to that information, so just to get a sense for, because the sample size also has an impact on how accurate that data is. So how many different companies are currently using Bizible that you're pulling that data from, that you can make that conclusion?
Yeah, so we have 250 customers currently. We just sort of crept over the 250 mark with our customers. So that's how many customers we've got. The survey that I'm actually quoting the data from is from more than just our base, so it's including some others that we've surveyed. 363 respondents in our annual state of pipeline marketing survey.
Okay, so yeah, so it's not a small sample size. You've got a significant amount of data points that you're pulling here. And I think when we look at what you're reporting and what you look at other reports, it seems to be kind of in line with what other reports would say. So I think there's definitely some validity there that, those are the usually the top ones that seem to have the best return. Next question, as a follow-up to that, how does that kind of top five channels change when you go by industry? And maybe just recap again what those five are and then discuss kind of how it would change by industry.
So the top five were word of mouth referrals, and that's kind of across the board pretty powerful, followed by email, SEO, conferences or trade shows, and outbound calling. So that's the top five. How that varies, sort of, if you start looking at industry, and I'll just pick like a couple of industries and their top performing channels, just so you can get an idea of like how different it is. So if you look at manufacturing, for example, you'll see email marketing is huge. It accounts for like 60%.
Wow.
That's looking at manufacturing. They're saying, you know, marketing is what's driving most revenue. If you look at the education industry, by contrast, they're saying it's actually so physical events, in-person, so conferences, trade shows, partner marketing, TV, radio, like all actual like physical in-person stuff. So quite different.
Yeah.
And then if you go to finance, it's SEO, the search engine optimization. And finally, tech industry. So that's the space that we obviously operate in. Content and trade shows are the two most important. So definitely varies a lot, but that's sort of some brief insights that we've gleaned.
Yeah, and just to clarify, with the industry that you're referencing manufacturing. So that would be a company that's manufacturing goods to sell to another business. Is that?
That's right. Right. Well, yeah. So not this. Yeah. So that I should also probably qualify that most of the time, yes. That being said, so similar to our client base, our survey is open. We don't exclusively sell to businesses that do B2B marketing.
Okay.
90 or 95% of our clients are B2B marketers, but we do have some that work in B2C industries, and the same is true with our survey respondents. For the most part, it's B2B marketers, but there are some industries where multi-touch attribution makes sense, where there are long sales cycles. And I guess when we get to talking about the funnel piece, we can explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And we're kind of moving into that category anyways. So just to clarify, and we'll get into what kind of different attribution models there are, but the data that you're talking about here, that was using a particular attribution model, or was that spanned across a bunch of different kind of attribution models?
That was spanned across that was like an aggregate across different attribution models. That being said, the right now in front of me, I don't have specific stats for the different, you know, different industries by attribution level, but I can tell you for any one individual company, if you're looking at the data and you change from a first touch view for that very first marketing interaction at the top of the funnel, you're going to see something quite different from a conversion touch, so a lead creation touch view, or something with where we're looking spanning the full from the very first marketing interaction to the last one before a deal closes. So definitely a lot of sort of different data that's available under different attribution levels, for sure.
And sorry, you were saying the data that we were looking at, it was last point attribution, or it was a combination of all of the kind of...
It was a combination.
Got it. Okay. And then maybe, yeah, if you could explain kind of what an attribution model is and maybe highlight some of the most common ones and give definitions for those.
Sure, yeah. So attribution models is kind of explaining how you're doing your attribution measurement. So which marketing interactions are you considering? And how we tend to look at it is we talk about this funnel, the sales and marketing funnel. So at the very top of the funnel, you have your very first marketing interaction. So for us, we call that first touch, and that is the first time an anonymous user visits your website. We'll track, so our JavaScript, our cookie will track that someone has actually visited the website in the very first instance at the top of the funnel. They don't have to actually take any action, they've just visited, and we will track what was the website that they came from, and any other parameters that allow us to see like any specific campaign that they're associated with, so we can get really granular marketing data about the channel and the campaign and any other details on what drove them to the website in that instance. So that's that first touch model where we're saying what was the marketing channel that made this person aware of you in the very first instance. Going slightly down the funnel, but still very much top of the funnel, is the lead creation touch, and that's where the individual, the prospect, they filled in a form, they converted on the website, and they became a lead. So that lead creation touch is when they're no longer anonymous. So that's sort of the second step down, but still very top of the funnel. And then we have a multi-touch model at the top of the funnel there called U-Shift, which splits attribution between the first touch, that first anonymous touch, the lead creation touch, so that touch where they filled out a form and identified themselves. And then it also gives some of the attribution, so some of the value of that opportunity is attributed to touches that might have occurred in between. The touch, yeah, U-shaped model, where we're getting the majority to that first touch and lead creation touch and some in between. As you get further down the funnel, we consider interaction down towards when an opportunity is created in the CRM. So most of our clients are using Salesforce, so if they create an opportunity in Salesforce, we'll say, what was that last touch? What was that last marketing interaction before an opportunity was created? And we have a W-shaped multi-touch attribution model that considers so the very first touch, the lead creation touch, and the opportunity creation touch, so the last touch before an opportunity is created, those three touches each get, under the W-shaped model, 30% each, so 90% of the attribution goes to those three touches, and the remaining 10% of the value of the opportunity is attributed to any marketing touches that occur in between. So that's sort of top to middle of the funnel reporting, but the deal hasn't closed yet, so... the next sort of standard out-of-the-box attribution model that we recommend is what we call full-path attribution, and that's looking at everything from that first anonymous touch at the top of the funnel right down to the last touch before a deal is closed. So in Salesforce, it's when it's moved to the close one stage. How that one works is we split 22.5% of the value of the opportunity to each of those four significant touches, so first touch, lead creation touch, opportunity creation touch, and close one touch, and the remaining 10% gets split between any marketing touches in between. It might have helped assist bringing it down the funnel, but didn't create huge momentum. So those significant milestones, whatever sort of pushes that down funnel momentum, is getting the most credit under those attribution models. We do have other models, so we can also do view-through attribution, which is pre-first visit to the website. We can see whether or not someone has actually seen a display ad, maybe on another website, feeding how much weighting you want to give each stage. So how much weighting the view through for that first display ad you get at the very, very top of the funnel versus the various other stages throughout the funnel. And then it also varies. So those stages I mentioned in those models that I recommended at the beginning, they're sort of benchmark standard stages, but every company is going to have different funnel stages that are important to them, be it MQL and SQL. So we have custom attribution models that allow businesses to decide for themselves, you know, what are the stages of the marketing funnel that are most important, and how much weighting do we want to give each of those stages? I'm not sure if that may have been a little bit too detailed, but that's how the attribution models work that we talk about.
Okay, and I think what might help for some of the listeners is like a visual of the different attribution models. So I don't remember where I saw this, but I've seen somewhere in your materials kind of pictures of the different attribution models. If it would be possible to get those, that we could include that with the podcast, then we can include that as well.
Absolutely. Yep. I'll make sure you get a copy of those.
Okay. So yeah, I'll include that, then the listeners can see that visually. So the next question, in regards to the attribution model, so which of all the different models, which one would you recommend for most businesses that they should use?
Again, I hate to default to saying that it varies, but it really does vary, not just by industry, but then by sort of where they are in terms of stages of development, as well as just really on a company-by-company basis. That being said, so I guess a custom attribution model is going to be the best.
Okay.
But that's obvious. That's relatively advanced. And if you're a marketer that's sort of new to attribution, the out-of-the-box attribution model is definitely a good place to start. But if you're only going to look at one attribution model, I would say go with the full-path model. So that's looking at all touches from the top of the funnel, that very first touch, right down to the last touch before a deal was closed, and you'll see how sort of in aggregate your various marketing channels are performing throughout the funnel. That being said, it always makes sense to not only look through the lens of one model. Maybe for outward reporting, if you're reporting to the broader business, sure. But in terms of understanding how your different marketing channels are working at different stages of throughout the pipeline, so from the top of the funnel versus the bottom of the funnel, it's very helpful to know that a certain channel is performing better at the top of the funnel, then you know where to sort of target and what type of efforts to be targeting.
Okay. So how would you, so if there's not kind of one standard model that's best for most businesses, how would you go about determining what is the right model, or how to even build that custom model? Is there a kind of step process that you'd go to determine what weight to give what step?
There is. A good starting point is to start with the out-of-the-box models.
Yep.
We do have an algorithmic model so that our data scientists will look at the data that we've tracked and make recommendations as to which stages to consider for your custom model, as well as a recommended weighting for each of those stages.
Okay.
So we'll actually provide something from our data scientists. We'll actually provide a recommendation for the individual company. But then if you're wanting sort of more strategic ways of thinking about it, then we will defer to our, we work with agencies or our agency partners to help develop strategy around which attribution models to use.
Okay. And then just getting to general return on investment, what would or what should a business owner expect as a return on investment from their marketing spend when you look across kind of all the data you've seen? What should they expect? What would be a really good return? What would be kind of an average return?
Yeah, so that's, again, another really, another The median that we have found is 1.5.
Okay.
It depends on the stage of the company, the industry, things like that. So, for example, in a high growth company that's very early on, it's probably okay to be having a negative ROI as you're building up and growing. As long as it's obviously driving growth. But as they become more established, you're wanting to see a higher ROI. So it definitely depends on those kinds of factors.
Okay. And that 1.5, is that an increase of 1.5 revenue to the cost of the program, or is that a 1.5 increase in profit, or how is that metric measured?
Yeah, so that's ROI, so that's revenue over investment. So
perfect.
That's based off of, 1.5 times the cost. So it's modest. Is the median, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then when you look at that one point...
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I was going to say, so to clarify, the median is certainly not the ideal, but that's where people are at.
That's where people are at, yeah.
Yeah.
And then when you look at that return as well, is that on 1 year of revenue, or if it's a type of like recurring purchase type service, would that be over a certain time period, or how would you look at it in terms of revenue that's kind of like a repeat purchase type thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So that'll depend on the individual company.
Yep.
But generally speaking, the way that most of our clients look at it, and the companies that we're working with, it definitely varies again. But one way that a lot of them will do it, just if it's, say, an annual subscription service, they would look at, as of today's date, how much revenue have I got confirmed? So if it's on a contract basis, they can say, well, we spent $10,000 in January, and as of November, we have $20,000 or $50,000 of contracts confirmed. So, although they may not have actually accrued, the revenue may not have accrued yet. That's how much it is has come in terms of the contract value that is locked in. So it would,
So it sounds like it would be over the course of a year then that they would look at.
Yeah.
One year.
That's pretty standard, but whatever the period is that the contracts are locked in.
Got it. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what would you say is the number one thing that you or Bizible has learned in terms of gaining new customers or increasing revenue from all the different clients you've talked to and data you've looked at? What would you say would be the number one tip you would give to business owners in terms of something that you learned about how to gain new customers and increase revenue?
Yeah, so probably the biggest learning is that attribution is, and it sounds kind of redundant, but attribution is super important for understanding. In terms of like improving your revenue, if you know what's driving revenue, so attribution, if you're able to attribute your revenue to a certain marketing channel, you're able to cut down on costs where you've got marketing channels that maybe are generating leads that are low quality, and spend more money on those channels that are driving leads of higher quality, and those channels that are nurturing those leads to closing the deals as you get further down the funnel. The other thing, though, from a Bizible specific perspective, what we have found for us, account-based marketing is really big. So that's the channel that we're focusing most of our energy on. Well, that's not a channel per se, because it's not a channel, but
right.
The strategy that we're taking, as opposed to blanket demand generation, we're finding for us focusing on the accounts that are most engaged. Knowing who those accounts are.
Knowing those accounts are and going after them.
Yeah.
And out of, I don't know if you can share this information or not, but With that account-based marketing, what kind of activities do you do to kind of target those accounts? Is it simply phone calls, or is there some other strategy that you've found that seems to work?
There are a lot of different components of our account-based marketing strategy. For example, in the online space, we'll do a lot of targeted marketing to specific individuals. Like one of the online channels we use is LinkedIn, and we found that to be very valuable in terms of driving revenue from an online perspective. The other piece is, so we have our own account-based marketing in-house tool that allows us to see which of the accounts that are inside our CRM, so inside Salesforce, that are most engaged with us. And we'll look at what types of marketing behaviors are they engaging with, and what kind of sales behaviors, and we'll look at, we also do lead to account mapping, so we'll pull in the information, not just from contacts on the account, but leads as well, and we'll understand, like, you know, how recently did they engage with us, what characteristics does this company have that are similar to other companies that have closed deals, and that helps us with sort of targeting. So targeting is a big piece of it, and then beyond that, there are a lot of agency things that we do. So we do events where we invite them to, where we invite those targets to events.
Oh, okay.
We do webinars. We do outbound calling is definitely something. So it's a combination of those sort of ABM channels that really help you to sort of focus on those targeted accounts.
Yeah, it sounds like a very very effective approach for sure. And then kind of the final question, and you know, we've covered maybe a little bit of this, but can you explain a little bit more in detail in terms of how Visible works and what makes it unique as a tool to track you know, marketing attribution, which, like you said, is so important, because if you don't know what's actually generating revenue, you can't make informed decisions of where to invest more or invest less. So yeah, how does Visible's solution for doing that work, and how is it different than other options that might be on the market?
Yeah, good question. So how it works is there are a couple of different components, but just to distill it, the online piece is entirely automated. So our customers, they place this one line of JavaScript on their website, so it's a line of code, which is on every page or throughout their website. And that JavaScript places a cookie onto the prospect browser and allows us to see any and all sessions. So every time a prospect comes onto the website, we'll see where they came from, what pages they viewed, what content they looked at, like what forms they filled out, all of that. Any activity we will track. It's kind of a bit of a big brother scenario, but we're able to see absolutely everything from an online perspective. With the offline side of things, we integrate with the Salesforce and Dynamics, and what we'll do is we will look at Salesforce campaigns, so for events and outbound calling efforts and direct mailers, we'll look at all of the campaign members on those Salesforce campaigns, and we'll create a digital touch point for those as well, so we can plot out the journey that a prospect account has had, and we don't just look at the individual. So I guess how we're different from, there are some B2C companies that do this really well, but they don't tie in the CRM data like we do, so they're looking at it from a broad sort of the B2C basis is a little bit different, whereas we're from the B2B space, we're actually tying all of the tracking that we do in with the CRM, so the Salesforce data, and we're able to see not just on the individual lead basis, but on an account level, we can see who are all of the people that are interacting with us, what are the marketing channels they interacted with, did they come, what was the marketing channel that drove the first person from that account to the website in the first instance that made that account aware of us. What was the marketing channel that tipped them over the edge that made someone on that account actually move from that anonymous to a known individual? And then as you get further down the funnel, understanding all of those different directions by various contacts on the account that actually drove the deal to a close. So that's how we sort of differentiate ourselves in general as an attribution solution. There are some, so like I said, there are some B2C systems that do it quite well, but they don't focus on the CRM side of things. There are a couple of competitors in the B2B space. They're a little bit behind us, so that we were lucky. We have the first mover in the space, so we our technology is sophisticated. We create our own data, so it's all automated by our technology, and it doesn't rely on repurposing. So what our B2B competitors do is they look at CRM data, except they're actually looking exclusively at what's already in the CRM, which is limited data, which is also impacted by human error. So it can be impacted by human error.
Yeah.
There's a lot more room for human error, I should say.
Yeah.
And it's sort of just repurposing what's already in the CRM, whereas what we do is we actually create our own data, which is cleaner and substantially more accurate.
So when you say you create your own data, let's say you send out a direct mailer, how does that data get created?
Yeah, so with the offline stuff, with the online stuff is where we're actually creating 100% new data. With the direct mailer, how we're doing it is we'll create digital touch points for everyone that is on that. So every campaign member on that campaign will get a digital touch point stamped. For that direct mailer. So when that direct mailer is sent out, we will create a digital touch point for every campaign member. It's the online piece that's a lot more difficult to track if you don't have a JavaScript like we do.
Got it. So if they had let's say someone sent out a direct mailer and the goal of the direct mailer was to get them to go to a specific page on the website, you guys would... it would automatically kind of create a touch point for everyone who received the mailer, and then if anyone who got the mailer went to the specific URL that was on the direct mailer, then that would be the data point that would be created, and it would show who looked at it. Is that kind of a proper understanding?
Yeah, exactly. If that's the way that they count. What happens a lot of times, though, with the direct mailer is... and this is why it's more difficult to track as well, right? You'll have a specific URL, but that URL, if it's too complex, people are just going to put in the root domain, and you're going to miss out on a lot of visibility on who actually,
So the key there is to get a short URL that's something not too difficult for them to get to.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. But still, if they just went to the home page, for example, you'd still be able to see that person went to the home page?
Yes, yeah, totally. So you'd see a couple of touch points. You'd be like, okay, on November 1st, they were sent a direct mailer, and then on November 4th, they came to our home page. And you'd be able to see that journey, and you if that was the way that they came... You'd be able to attribute that to the mailer or whatever. It could be, it's interesting as well, though. You might find that you send them a mailer and then they come in through some other online channel because maybe they went to Google and typed you in and came through SEO, and that shows that actually it's really important to also be spending on search engine optimization as well as direct mail.
Yeah.
Because you don't want or paid search as well, because you don't want your competitors bidding on your brand name and having them type in your name in Google and come back to
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Very good. So that's all the questions I had for today. Is there anything else that you wanted to add to kind of wrap up?
I think that's it for me too. I mean, I'll share those attribution models with you and. Happy to answer any questions that anyone has by email.
Perfect. So what I'll do maybe is in the podcast post, I'll make note of that and put your email if you're comfortable with that, and then they can follow up with you and get any questions they have answered.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Well, thanks again, Fabian, for your time. And I think this is a very informative and interesting podcast that has some great info. So thanks again for taking the time to do it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales and Marketing ROI podcast brought to you by ProfitWorks. Become the leader in your market. ProfitWorks provides marketing services specializing in website search engine optimization and conversion optimization services. To become the leader in your market, when it comes to your online presence, give us a call and let's set up a time to talk. Call 226-241-7827. Again, you can find this recording as well as the podcast summary notes on our blog at www.profitworks.ca/blog.